Hello, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 22 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Micogliano of the USA Today Network, and we've got a really, really fun show for you guys today. I think you guys are going to like this one a lot. We're going to hit on one of the topics that I've been getting quite a few questions about lately, and that, of course, is the Buffalo Sabres and Jack Eichel. I have our guest this week. I wanted to reach out to somebody who I felt like could give us the real scoop on what's happening in Buffalo, and then kind of let ourselves have a little fun with the hypothetical stuff on the back end of the program in the final segment. But our interview this week is with Bill Hoppe. He's the Buffalo Sabres reporter for the Times Herald. He's been around the team as much as anybody in the last few years, and I was really able to kind of pick his brain about what exactly the mood is in Buffalo right now, what the likelihood of something happening as far as a trade would be this season, off season, next season. So I felt like Bill was one of the best guys I could get on here to kind of dive in on not just what Rangers fans want to hear, but on the reality of the situation, if you will. So we'll get to Bill in just a little bit. And like I mentioned at the back end of the program, one of the Twitter questions that I plan on answering is about what it will take, salary cap implications, players that could be at risk of being traded, all that kind of stuff. So we will go into the hypothetical rabbit hole just a little bit. But for now, let's start with what's happening with the Rangers, who have now actually won 4 out of 6 games. It feels a little disjointed. It's kind of doesn't feel like there's been a whole lot of momentum given all the other stuff that's been going on around the team with injuries and Artemi Panarin and go on down the line. But the Rangers have indeed won 4 out of 6 as we sit here on Wednesday, March 3rd. The team is off today, no practice, but still plenty of stuff for us to cover, including Tuesday's 3-2 win over the Buffalo Sabres. Not the most inspiring win that we've seen from the Rangers this season, and that was kind of the mood that you got from them in talking to them post-game. David Quinn called it sluggish. He didn't seem overly pleased with the effort, but they found a way to win, which is the most important thing. We've seen this team play, we think, well enough to win in plenty of games this season and come out on the losing end. So a game where maybe they felt like they could have done some things better, but still found a way to win, they'll take it for sure. The game, to me, had this kind of wide open feel in the beginning. The Rangers scored 2 goals in the first 2.5 minutes, essentially. That top line of Zibanejad, Lafreniere, and Buchnevich was playing their best stretch of hockey. I don't know if it lasted the whole game. I really wouldn't say that. But the first period, for sure, those guys were buzzing and playing well. And that's a positive sign, an encouraging thing for the Rangers. Chris Kreider's hot streak continues. He's got 6 goals in his last 5 games, 10 goals in total. So we were giving him a lot of heat only a couple weeks ago, it feels like. And now he has been kind of what you saw from him last year when he started slow and then got really hot and scored a bunch of goals for the Rangers in the middle of the season. So Kreider is definitely going in the right direction right now. And then the thing, I think at the end of the game, you can kind of look at it two ways. In one way, you would have liked to see the Rangers push forward a little bit more, maintain a little more possession, keep the puck away from the Sabres. But at the same time, they were very responsible defensively. They only allowed 5 shots on goal in the third period to the Sabres, who we know, despite their struggles, they have a lot of talented offensive players on that team. And they really kind of locked it down defensively. They didn't make any crucial mistakes that hurt them in that third period. And that, I think, is a little bit of a sign of maturity. Again, David Quinn was stressing after the game that he would have liked to see them keep the puck away from the Sabres a little bit more, but it's hard to argue with only allowing 5 shots on goal in a period. You'll take that any day, any game. So the Rangers get the win there. I did think in watching the Sabres, and we'll touch on this with Bill in just a minute, but their effort, if you want to talk about sluggish, that third period to me, I was at the game last night in the Garden, which, by the way, it's been great to see fans there. The last 3 games, especially that Friday night win against Boston, the place was really rocking as much as it can be with only 1,800 people in the building. It's kind of funny because when the place is jammed, it's just kind of this one constant sound and the cheers are, you know, everything's just loud, right? But when there's fewer people and they're spread out the way that they are, you can kind of hear what individual people are saying. So when somebody's screaming at Jack Eichel that he's a bum, or somebody goes into the penalty box and the fans are riding them, you really don't have any trouble hearing it. And I'm sure it's the same way for the players on the ice. So it's been an interesting experience, and it's obviously been very cool to see fans back in the building. But as far as the Sabres' effort in that third period, I thought it was really lackluster. And one play that stood out to me, and, you know, we don't want to psychoanalyze too much. We don't know what's going on in somebody's head. But there was a play in the third period where Jack Eichel seemed to get a little frustrated. He was right in front of the penalty box, and he kind of looked like he gave up on the play a little bit to me. He kind of was just standing there, and then the play gets going the other way, and he stayed in his spot, didn't really make up much of an effort to join in the play. And then Buffalo gets the puck back, and a pass was made to him, and he just kind of half-heartedly stuck his stick out. It bounced off his stick. He lost control of the puck, and the Rangers end up going the other way, and then Eichel comes off for a change. So, you know, again, who knows what was going on in that moment? Bill actually touches on, is this guy hurt or not? That's something, a question that they're asking in Buffalo right now. But not just Eichel. I did feel as a whole that the Sabres looked a little bit like a dejected team in that third period against the Rangers. But again, the position the Rangers are in right now, you got to take any win you can get. And if there's any team that you can beat up on in this really difficult division right now, it's the Sabres. So that was in many ways a must win for them, because that is the team of all the teams in their division right now that when you look at, you say the Rangers in a head-to-head matchup should win. Before the game with Buffalo, they split with Boston. And quite frankly, I think even though the effort on Sunday was disappointing, you have to come out of that kind of encouraged, because the Rangers looked great in that Friday night win with the fans back in the building for the first time. A 6-2 win, a complete effort from their team, solid defensively, obviously explosive offensively because they come away with a season high 6 goals. But what stood out to me, and I asked David Quinn this after the game, was just the way that the Rangers matched the physicality of the Bruins, not necessarily by just running around and trying to throw big hits. And they had a few of those. We know the Lindgren hit on Pastrnak got a lot of attention, and deservedly so. But Quinn had made the statement over the summer when the Rangers got swept by the Hurricanes that being physical, being tough, isn't just about hitting people. And what he meant when he was saying that was it's the willingness to go to the dirty areas. It's the willingness to get to the net front, which the Rangers have been doing better lately, and the willingness to go in and be physical when it comes to loose puck battles, face-offs, 50-50 pucks, just being willing to throw your body around in the situations where that is required. And I thought the Rangers really did that in a smart way in that game against Boston on Friday. Probably the most physical and smartest game that we've seen the Rangers play, because they weren't just looking for the big wow hit. They weren't just fighting people. They were doing things the way that they needed to do them to win against a really hard-nosed, tough team like Boston. So that Friday night game was really encouraging. And given the guys that the Rangers have out right now, to come away with 2 points in 2 games against Boston, I think you'll take it. The key thing to remember here is the Rangers have been doing all of this, winning 4 out of their last 6, largely without Artemi Panarin, without Kaapo Kakko, without Jacob Trouba, and up until Tuesday night, they didn't have Filip Hedl either. So those are 4 key players they have been playing without, and finding a way to scratch and claw and get points in that situation, to me, is more of a positive thing than anything that we've seen in the last week or so. The latest on those guys who are out, Panarin obviously is the big one. We talked about him a lot on last week's episode. I've been asking about this pretty much every day, whether it's David Quinn or other people with the Rangers. There is still no concrete timetable on his return. The Rangers are really trying to be sensitive to the situation. I've told you guys that Panarin, I know, was concerned about his family that remains in Russia. I think that was one of the primary things he's been trying to deal with during this absence. So the Rangers aren't going to rush him back by any means. We do know that he's been skating, and I have some reason to believe that he could be back sooner than later, but the Rangers are being pretty tight-lipped on this and are not giving us a date. So I don't think I would expect to see him Thursday night against the Devils. You never say never, but sometime in the next few games, definitely possible, but who knows? That's the truth right now, is that nobody has a definitive answer when it comes to Panarin returning. Kaapo Kakko, the good news is he came off the NHL's COVID list on Tuesday. So now he's going through the return to play protocols. You have to remember that it's not as simple as just coming off the list and rejoining the lineup. We've seen that from Kakko earlier in the season. We saw it from Keandre Miller, where they only spent a day or two on the list and then were able to go right back in, but that was because of false positive tests. In this case, Kako spent an extended time on the list. We'll still confirm whether or not he definitely had COVID, but you can kind of connect the dots a little bit yourself. He needs to go through the protocols now to return to the lineup. I've been told it's not a given he'll play Thursday against the Devils. It sounds to me a little bit like Saturday, the second game against the Devils, is the more likely scenario, but we'll see. Truba's going to be a little bit longer. We know he's dealing with that broken thumb, and then obviously Hedl returned on Tuesday, so that's a good sign for the Rangers. Once they get these guys back, Panarin and Kako especially, Truba I think could be a little bit longer, but Panarin and Kako I think the Rangers are hoping to see sometime in the next week or so. Once they get those guys back in the lineup, that is when it really is time for this team to declare itself. What I mean by that is, I know it hasn't been pretty a lot of the time. We know the record is 8-9-3 at this point, 20 games into the season. But there is still time to make a push and keep things interesting. It's somewhat of a long shot. But right now, as of the time of this recording on Wednesday, they're 6 points out of a playoff spot. And you can make up ground pretty quickly when you're only playing the teams that you're chasing, which we know is the situation with the Rangers this year. By no means am I betting that they're going to make the playoffs or anything like that, but they do have a chance with the season still having 36 games left to make a push to keep things interesting, especially when the lineup is whole again. So I think that that is really what we'll be looking for once they get back to full strength or as close to full strength as possible is, given some of the improvements that we've seen, we've talked about the defensive improvements, we've talked about the physicality improvement that they showed in that game against Boston, the willingness to get to the net, some of the things that David Quinn has been harping on. If they can combine that stuff with having their full skilled complement of a lineup, I'm just curious to see what happens. You know, I'm not making a prediction one way or the other, but I think it will be interesting, and the clock is certainly ticking. So assuming that they can get close to full strength soon, that's kind of the thing that I think we'll be watching as this month of March unfolds is, are the Rangers going to make a push? Will they keep things interesting? Or if the losing continues or the up and down play continues, that's when the focus really starts to shift entirely to development and kind of positioning themselves for next year. All right. So that's the latest on the Rangers. We're going to get to your Twitter questions in just a little bit in the last portion of this program. But first, let's get to the interview that I know a lot of you want to hear with Bill Hoppe, where we will talk about the Buffalo Sabres and, of course, what's going on with Jack Eichel. All right, and now we will welcome into the program a man who hopefully will be able to answer some of our questions. I've been getting asked about the Buffalo Sabres and one player in particular very frequently lately, so I figured I should reach out to somebody who would kind of know what's going on behind the scenes there better than me, and that is Bill Hoppe, the Buffalo Sabres reporter for the Times Herald. You can find all of his work at buffalohockeybeat.com. Bill, things have been crazy up there, it seems, lately. Thank you for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm good, Vincent. How are you?
I'm doing great. I guess the simple question, the easy way to start here is, I actually, before the game on Tuesday night, was looking at the roster for the Sabres, and I'm like, you know, this is a pretty talented roster. But then you look at the record, I think it's 6-11-3 now. So what the heck is going on up there? Can you give Rangers fans and anybody who's listening kind of an idea of how it's been going with a lot of the Sabres stuff in the news for the last week or so?
Well, it's been going very poorly, and it's been going very poorly for almost a decade now. It's crazy when you think about how consistently good they were throughout their franchise history. But in the last 10 years, after they made the playoffs in 2011, they hit a wall, and they haven't been able to get out of it, this tailspin. And this year, they had a decent start by their standards. They were about 500. They were doing some good things. They played well in some losses. And then they had that COVID break, that COVID pause, and they just haven't been able to get out of it. And part of you understands it just because they had so many players gone. They had players sick. I mean, Rasmus Ristolainen, who's a physical specimen, terrific player. It shut him down. He had trouble walking upstairs. So they were dealing with a lot. So part of you understands that, but they've been back for a couple of weeks now, and they just haven't gotten it going. And, they've fallen into last place, and probably they've fallen out of the race and they're going to miss the playoffs for a record tying season, the longest streak in NHL history, believe it or not. So, but these last couple of weeks, a few weeks of play, you have some anomalies, 10 games. Okay. Things can happen, whatever. You expect guys who have been stars, guys who have a history of performance to get going. And they just haven't. I mean, Jack Eichel has 2 goals, 1 at even strength, which is mind-boggling to me. Taylor Hall scored a power play goal opening night. That's it. I mean, 1 goal for Taylor Hall. Kyle Okposo hasn't scored yet. Jeff Skinner, who makes $9 million, has 0 goals. He's been a healthy scratch 3 times. I mean, it's crazy what's happened, but you expect sooner or later they're going to break out of it, and they just haven't.
You touched on one guy in particular who I want to get to, but we'll hold off on that for a minute. I want to ask about Tuesday night. Rangers win 3-2. It started off a pretty entertaining game, kind of wide open, and then got a little boring, I would say, by the end.
Yes.
What did you make of that? I mean, for me, I don't watch the Sabres play all the time, only when they play the Rangers. But besides that Cousins fight at the end, where he definitely held his own, and I know that that got some attention, but the effort to me, especially in the third period, it did not look great. I did not feel like they were really fighting, scratching, clawing to try to get that tying goal. They only end up with 5 shots on goal in the final period. I mean, what did you make of what you saw on Tuesday night?
Well, it was how the Sabres, we judge them differently just because they've been so bad. So as far as that effort goes compared to the back-to-back shutouts against the Flyers over the weekend, that was good. They made progress. But overall, it wasn't that great an effort. But within the game, there's things you like. Kyle Okposo didn't score, but he played pretty well. He had a couple chances. Jeff Skinner had maybe his best game of the year, so you like that. You like that they fought back after they fell behind less than a minute into the game. And then, like you said, the Dylan Cousins fight got a lot of attention. And that was something they needed that. You think a team with a lot of veterans, a lot of established talent would be able to jumpstart itself, but they haven't. And after the game, Kyle Okposo said that was the bench was excited. They probably haven't been more fired up this year. And it took in game 20, it took a 20-year-old rookie getting into a fight, you know, to have their big moment of the year. So I think that kind of says a lot about the state of the Sabres right now, where they're not in a good place. And I think they just get frustrated. They don't face adversity well. And you see efforts like you saw over the weekend where there was just nothing going on. I mean, they just didn't lose 3-0. I mean, there weren't a lot of scoring chances. There was no hits. You don't see a lot of passion. And Tuesday night was a step up from that, but they still have a long ways to go.
So you touched on the frustration. We've seen various reports and heard a lot of rumors in the last week or so. You being around the team all the time, is the frustration as bad as the outside perception, or what is kind of the mood, the general feeling around the team right now?
I think the frustration is as bad as the perception. I mean, you have a guy like Jack Eichel who 6 years in the league now, and he hasn't played a playoff game. I mean, if you would have said that when they drafted him in 2015 in Florida, that after 6 years or 5 years that Jack Eichel wouldn't have played even one playoff game. I mean, he was supposed to lead the Sabres back to glory, of course. I mean, he was the centerpiece, the franchise piece, and it hasn't happened. And he just looks frustrated. You have people saying he wants to get traded, that he's kind of, I don't want to use the word checked out because I don't think that's fair, but he's just, he's not happy. I mean, who knows if that's true, but he just hasn't had the season or the career that he's wanted. And I think that started to get to him. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads me right into what my next question was going to be. And that's what every Rangers fan wants to know, is where do things stand with Eichel? You touched on him being unhappy, and there have been reports about that. But like, it sounds like, as far as you know, it's not confirmed definite that he's gone to anybody from the team, whether it was during the offseason, whether it was recently, and expressed that he's unhappy, expressed that he might want a change of scenery.
No. Everything concerning Jack Eichel, as far as, you know, trade rumors and all that, that's all speculation. I've never heard it. He's never said anything. To his credit, he said the right things. And he, like I said, he looks frustrated to us, but he says all the right things. We're making a lot of these kind of assumptions just off, you know, body language and stuff like that. You understand he's human. I mean, he's going to be frustrated with the way things have gone over the past few weeks, this season, his career. But everything is based on speculation. I mean, he's said the right things as far as committing to Buffalo, wanting to bring a Stanley Cup home for them, how he likes the area and the fan base and everything. So to his credit, he's done a great job kind of dealing with all that noise.
How would you assess his play this season? You touched on he only has 2 goals, but I think he has like 13. I think last night was his 13th assist. So do you see him at the level that he was at, let's say, last year, or do you think that he has maybe not performed quite to that level?
No, he hasn't been at that level. Last year, he was really at an MVP level. He had a little slump the last week or two, but, I mean, he was a legit MVP candidate. I think he finished 8th in the Hart Trophy voting.
Yep.
But, I mean, he was on a – you figure he was going to score 40 goals, maybe hit 50. He was at that pace, have 100 points. So, I mean, he really took his place among the NHL's elite centers, elite talents. And this year, I think he's dealing with an injury. They've said he's not hurt. I mean, he got hurt last week, but before that they said he wasn't hurt. But I think my thought is that he was dealing something. He missed the first 5 days of training camp. And I think with the shortened training camp, no exhibition games, jumping right into a crazy season, I think that's had an effect. So he used the COVID break to kind of reset, to get his body right. And I know he studied video of his exploits from last season, and he felt he was ready to take off, but he really hasn't these past couple of weeks. And he looks frustrated to me.
The big question here is, and I appreciate you kind of giving us some perspective here, because I think that the outside perception might be that a trade is imminent and it's going to happen soon, and things are so bad that he really wants out. But do you see it heading toward an eventual trade if things don't get better, if the Sabres continue to lose? You mentioned he's been in the league for 6 years and he still hasn't had a playoff appearance. And for a guy of his caliber, that's going to be increasingly important for him as he gets deeper into his career. He's still only 24, but do you think that things could get so bad where that would happen at any point this season, off season, future? I mean, how do you kind of assess the trade rumors right now?
Well, it could reach that point for sure. The Sabres have been in such a tailspin that the progress is so incremental. I mean, they have a tiny improvement. It feels like they made big steps just because they've been in such a bad place for so long. So I think unless there's significant improvement, it could get to that point. And I understand his frustration. It would be a monumental trade. I think it's more a trade for the offseason, but it would be a monumental trade for the franchise, just to make sure that I'm not sure if I'm using the right word, monumental, but it would be such a huge trade for the franchise if it ever came to that, just to make sure they got it right, that they got the correct assets back, that they could get like another center. I mean, you trade a guy like him, are you going to get a guy like him back that caliber? I mean, you might have to take some futures on it. I mean, if they did trade him and they got it wrong, I mean, that could set them back even further. So it's such a difficult situation, but it could come to that. But like I said, he's handled this pretty well, just always, you know, saying the right things about the team and the city and so forth.
Well, you touch on the offseason, and that's kind of been my feeling from talking to people about this even before the season started. Clearly, he's a guy that the Rangers would be interested in because of their center needs, because of all the assets they've accumulated, and because they are in a position they feel at some point to make a splashy deal and help themselves at a position of need like center. But, Eichel makes $10 million a year. The offseason is a time when teams could kind of maneuver the cap a little bit more. Right now, for that kind of trade to happen, a team would have to be sending almost close to equal money back in most cases for the Sabres, which complicates things a little bit more. So you don't, if you had to venture a guess right now, you would say that it's less likely that it would happen before the trade deadline this year, more likely that it might be something explored in the offseason if Eichel expresses that that's what he might want.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a summer deal to me. Those deals always seem to happen in the summer. Just the money's so complicated, things kind of calm down. And the Sabres have a rookie GM in Kevin Adams. And Kevin Adams is a very smart guy. I have a lot of respect for him. But he's tackling something new, coming in with really no experience. And to pull off something that complicated, I think it's gonna take some wheeling and dealing. And if you're, if you're the Sabres, you hear Alexis Lafreniere would come back or something like that. And who knows, but he's a winger. The Sabres, if they trade him, they're going to need a center. So I think there's so many complications to make potential deal happen. Really.
You touch on the center thing. Now, I don't know how familiar you are with the Rangers roster prospects and all that. Obviously I'm immersed in this stuff, but the growing sentiment, and with you saying that they would need a center back, this adds to that narrative, is that the Rangers, to make a deal happen, might have to include somebody like Mika Zibanejad, who is struggling this season. He is not having anywhere close to what people expected him to have, but he had COVID in the preseason, missed a lot of training camp, a little similar to Eichel, although for different reasons, and has struggled to find his footing and maybe has lost a little bit of his value with this 20-game showing that he's had. But last year, he was the most efficient goal scorer in the NHL. The Rangers felt like he established himself as a legitimate number one center. And that seems like a piece that might intrigue the Sabres, but then it would have to be beyond that. You'd probably have to talk about first round picks. You'd probably have to talk about, high level prospects beyond that. For this to even be a consideration for the Sabres, do you think that's the kind of thing that it would take? Would it take a guy like Zibanejad, first round picks, and then, other pieces like prospects around that?
Probably, but I they're at a stage where they have to win. So I think it would take more established pieces, maybe not a 30-year-old, but established pieces entering or in their prime, the 25-year-old, the 23-year-old, the 26-year-old. It's such an interesting fan base here. They're so passionate. It's very unique. It's like a Canadian market. Everywhere you go, you see Sabres stuff. It's the Sabres really are, hockey in general too. They're just a passion, and they become so frustrated. They're so down on this team that if this continues another year or two or whatever, you wonder what's going to happen. I mean, there used to be a waiting list for season tickets. Now, when the Sabres reopen their building in a few weeks, they can have a little less than 2,000 fans, maybe. You wonder if they're even going to bother, because it's such a process to get into the building now. You wonder what a crowd with 2,000 potential fans might look like. So they're at a very tricky place in their existence, really, where they could lose a significant portion of their fan base if they don't start winning soon, because they're so sick of the losing. So to me, that says that any deal like that might have prospects and first round picks and all that. But if anything were to happen, they need something immediate back.
Yeah, well, that's, and that's a great point, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of people overlook the fan base. How would they react to him going? I'm sure that he has been like the golden child for them. He's been their best player for years now. They would probably hate to see him go in a lot of ways. Like, what do you think would be the fan base's reaction to the idea of trading him? And do you think that adds reluctance on the part of ownership and the general manager and all that to maybe hold on and try to make this work instead of making any rash decisions?
Well, that would definitely play in. I think if they saw Eichel go, I think that would upset them. If they got something equal value back, maybe they would like that, just because it's new blood. But I think he's a guy. I mean, the Sabres tank two seasons, literally two full seasons, to try to get the number one pick in 2015. And obviously they didn't, but they got a very nice piece. And I think after going through all that, to trade him would be such, I don't know what the word is. It would be so significant that I think it would really make them think twice. And to lose the face of your franchise, even though they've been losing, to lose a guy you've built everything around, you gave a massive contract, I think that could be definitely a potential deterrent. Especially, I mean, he's having an off season for sure. I mean, he's still been pretty good at times, as you said, but he's probably going to get back to what he was. He's probably going to get back to, at some point, whether it's in a week, a month, or next season, he's going to get back to being that 40 goal type scorer, a guy who could have 100 points, a guy who could be a potential MVP. So I think they have to consider all that.
So if you were, I know you're not in the business of making wagers or anything like that, but what do you think are the chances that this works out? And what do you think are the chances that eventually, for whatever reasons, that it might lead to some kind of trade, divorce, whatever you want to call it?
I still think it's slim that he gets traded. I mean, there's always that potential that he just has enough and says, listen, I need a change of scenery, and then they pursue it. But I still think that he's a guy that he loved, from my opinion, at least from talking to him and just hearing stuff, that he loved the idea of, you know, being the hero for Buffalo, the guy that could lead them back to glory. And that, I'm sure that played a part in him signing his massive extension a few years ago. So he wants to be the guy. I think he relishes that role, and maybe he still wants that. I mean, my thought is that he, as frustrated as he might be, that he still wants that. So we'll see how it plays out. It's just a very difficult situation. And the other thing is, would the Sabres want to trade him within the conference, within the division? I don't know how that would play out. I mean, you know, you hear stuff about Eichel and the Bruins because he's from Boston. It's like, well, would the Sabres really want to trade him to a division rival that they've been chasing for a decade? So I don't know if that plays into it. I think it would, but I mean, there's so many things to consider.
Yeah. And I think there's only, I mean, a lot of teams would be interested, no doubt about it, but to put together the kind of package that you're talking about, and I think you really stressed the importance that it would need to not just be prospects and picks, but it would need to be guys who could contribute right away, because it's going to be hard to sell to the fan base trading a guy like that if you aren't getting guys back that you can put right into your lineup. So that might limit the field a little bit, especially like you're saying, if they are reluctant to maybe trade in the division or in the conference. So I think a lot of people are getting their hopes up that maybe something could happen this trade deadline. But it sounds like you, as somebody who's around the team all the time, thinks that's unlikely. If anything, it would be further down the line, and the situation would really have to deteriorate.
Definitely. I think from everything I've seen, like I said, I think it's more speculation than anything concrete.
All right. Awesome, Bill. Well, I appreciate the time so much. This was fun. I know it's been crazy times for, it's actually been crazy times for both of us. Both teams have had a lot of stuff going on in the news recently. Yes. Glad we were able to do it. Definitely let me know if I could help you out at any point in the future with anything you want to, on their way out, maybe give fans an idea of how they can find your work.
Yeah, just Buffalo Hockey Beat is the newspaper beat coverage all in one place. So check it out if you're interested.
Cool. And then I will definitely share Bill's Twitter handle and all that when the episode comes out. Thanks again, Bill, and good luck with everything.
Thank you, Vincent.
All right. Thank you to Bill for taking the time to chat with us. I have a lot of thoughts on what we just heard from him. I might have not been as optimistic about the trade possibility as some of you would have liked to hear, but I do think that it was important to hear, because I think a lot of the times when you are looking at things as a fan of one team, you're not necessarily considering the factors in play for the other team. So Bill, again, as a guy who is immersed in what's going on with the Sabres all day, every day, I thought it was important to not just give you my perspective on what the Rangers might be thinking, but also to give you Bill's perspective on what is going on in Sabres land. So I have more thoughts on all of the stuff that we just talked about with Bill. We're going to dive right into the Twitter questions, though, because I decided to use one of the questions that you guys asked to kind of sum everything up with this whole Eichel situation. And obviously, I'll be touching on some of the things that we talked about with Bill. So let's dive right into that. And our first Twitter question of the week comes from Jack Franson, who asked, what do you think an Eichel trade package would look like? The disclaimer we're going to start with here is there's lots of obstacles, lots of variables. I know there's a million trade proposals out there right now. If you surf on Twitter, if you read various stories, everybody has an opinion on this, and it's fun. It's a lot of fun. I like doing that stuff myself, so that's why I'm going to, you know, dive in and have the conversation here. I plan on touching on it on the show today and then also addressing it in a story soon, because I really want to lay out what some of the hurdles are, what the factors are at play for something like this to actually happen. So I plan on doing that in a story sometime soon, which you guys know where to look, loha.com/sports/Rangers. But with that disclaimer out there, it is fun to have this conversation, to have this debate, and talk some hypotheticals. So I'm going to dive in here and actually go into some things that I think could be involved in the conversation, some players who could be involved in the conversation if the trade happens, and give you kind of my full thoughts on the whole thing. Any package that's going to happen, we know, would start with at least one first-round pick, maybe multiple first-round picks. We're going to talk about some players' names, but keep in the back of your mind that there's also probably a first-round pick or two tacked on to this trade. Based on my conversations with Bill, based on my conversations with other people, you would have to think, and Bill made this very clear, that it would not just be a package based on prospects. The Sabres would need something to sell their fan base on now. Some guys who could step into the lineup and contribute right away. You aren't going to trade arguably one of the top 10 players in the league and only do it for future considerations. So it seemed pretty clear that at the center of that package would have to be a center. And that tells me that a package would have to include either Zibanejad or Hedl. And if it's Hedl, there's probably more pieces that have to come with him than just if you trade Zibanejad. And even with Zibanejad, there would have to be more pieces to come with him. I know a lot of people have said, okay, the Rangers will throw Ryan Strome in. That's not going to be the answer here. The only way that I think Ryan Strome is an acceptable center for the Sabres to take in return is if the Rangers are also including somebody like Lafreniere or Kako. Obviously, Lafreniere would be the preference, I think, for the Sabres. And I do think that the Rangers would probably view him as untouchable. Never say never. Maybe I'm wrong. But my gut and the people that I've talked to have indicated, I believe, that Lafreniere would not be someone the Rangers would be willing to discuss in this kind of a trade scenario. So that means I think you basically have to come to grips with giving up at least one from the options of Zibanejad, Hedl, or Kako. And again, if it's Hedl, you're talking about much bigger pieces to go with him. So it's a lot more in that case. The only way that I think Strome being part of this trade would happen is if the Rangers are giving up one of those key other guys, Lafreniere, Kako, maybe somebody like Adam Fox. But if we're not trying to trade those guys, if the Rangers don't want to trade Lafreniere, don't want to trade Kako, don't want to trade Fox, which we have every reason to believe they wouldn't want to trade one of those guys, I think you're looking at either Zibanejad or Hedl definitely being in this trade. As for the other pieces, I know it makes a lot of sense from the Rangers' perspective to look at one of their right-handed defenseman prospects. These are highly touted guys, talking about Nils Lundqvist and Braden Schneider, and given the fact that the Rangers already have Adam Fox and Jacob Trouba as right-handed defensemen on the NHL roster, we know they can't fit both Lundqvist and Schneider into their future plan. So definitely, I think it makes a lot of sense that at some point in the future, you're going to hear either Nils Lundqvist or Braden Schneider's name mentioned in trades. But here's the thing. I was talking to Bill not just in what you guys heard in the recording for the podcast, but also just in general when we were kind of tossing some names around and talking about what the Sabres' needs are. And we know that they have Rasmus Dahlin, the number one overall pick from a couple of years ago, as their most talented, biggest upside defenseman. he's a left-handed guy. But beyond him, Bill made it very clear to me that he thinks the Sabres have a much bigger void, a much bigger need in terms of left-handed defensemen. So that to me, and Bill agreed with me when I said this to him, that points much more to somebody like Keandre Miller than one of those right-handed defensemen like Lundqvist or Schneider. So Miller seems like he would be a pretty obvious trade for Buffalo. With that in mind, the offer that kept coming up in conversations and the offer that I keep kind of coming back to is Zibanejad, Miller, and a first-round pick for Eichel. Now, maybe Buffalo asked for a topper, could be more of a middling prospect like a Gauthier, a Morgan Barron. If they want a goalie, maybe a Tyler Wall. Maybe another draft pick, second or third round, maybe another first round, or who knows. They're obviously going to be aiming pretty high. But I think that if the Rangers went to them with an offer of Zibanejad, Miller, and a first round pick as the nuts and bolts of that offer, that would be something that the Sabres would have to consider. Zibanejad is, before this year, you would have said definitely a number one center. Now you would say borderline given his recent play. But Keandre Miller is obviously a prospect with huge upside. He's already proven he can be a top four NHL defenseman. And then the first round pick is obviously a very valuable asset. So the Sabres, I think, would have to give that serious consideration. If you're the Rangers, though, would you do that? And that's a question that I think we need to examine a little more thoroughly here. The thing that I keep getting hung up on is the conversation coming into this season was always about finding a second-line center to solidify the top six behind Zibanejad. Obviously, Eichel is a number one center. If he were here with Mika, Mika's the number two center, no doubt. But the dream scenario was always having both Zibanejad and Eichel. Now, I've heard people say that they can't afford both of them, but I don't think that's such a black and white thing. Here's an alternative trade offer just to kind of outline the point a little bit, and then we'll dive into the financials. Let's say, and I don't know if the Sabres would be interested in this or not, but let's put together a package that's Filip Hedl, Pavel Buchnevich, Keandre Miller, Alex Georgiev, and then you throw in that first-round pick. That's a pretty interesting package for me if I'm the Sabres, right? In that scenario, the real answer as far as fitting both Mika and Eichel financially is that it depends, right? I played around with the potential 21-22 roster, the roster for next season. If you include Eichel and Mika with that trade that I just laid out, I think the Rangers could make it work. Mika is owed $5.35 million. Now, we know next year is the last year of his contract, but just for next year, $5.35 million. I don't think, given the way he's playing right now, he's in a position to make big demands this offseason as far as an extension. So if he goes into the final year of his contract at $5.35, Eichel's at $10. By trading Hedl and Buch, that's two fewer restricted free agents the Rangers have to worry about, and both those guys would be due for pretty big raises going into next season. But if they include them in a package, Hedl and Buch, those two fewer guys they have to pay. The key remaining restricted free agents for next season would be Igor Shesterkin and Ryan Lindgren. Just a rough estimate, and again, I'm going to have to lay this out in a story because it's probably harder for you guys to visualize on a podcast, but a rough estimate of maybe what Igor and Lindgren would cost would be, let's say, around $8 million for those two. Plus, you figure they're going to sign Nils Lundqvist. That contract, as all these entry-level contracts are, would be under $1 million. You also figure a Tony DeAngelo buyout. I did some quick math with all this. Having Hedl and Buch go to another team in a trade and then adding Eichel would leave the Rangers with roughly $13 million in cap space. The big hole in this scenario would be left-handed defense, because if you're trading Keandre Miller, that basically leaves you Ryan Lindgren and nothing else. So they'd have to make some kind of a signing or addition there. But down the middle, you'd then have Jack Eichel, Mika Zibanejad, Ryan Strome for one more year, still under contract, as your third-line center. And then you would have Kevin Rooney, Brett Howden, pick your poison for fourth-line center. That's pretty good, obviously. That would mean they'd have to rely on low-cost options for the bottom six, guys like Vitali Kratsov, Morgan Barron, Colin Blackwell, Rooney we just touched on, you know, maybe Howden or Gauthier, depending on expansion draft, and both of those guys are restricted free agents. But you could fill out a conceivable bottom six with those kind of guys. There's also potential performance bonus overages, which we know the Rangers have been dealing with this year. So that's a consideration for next year as well. But it seems doable. It does seem doable. If you can send guys like Hedl and Buch back and not have to pay them, to fit Eichel and Mika in the same season. It gets trickier for the following season, the 22-23 season, because Mika will need a new contract by then. Plus, you've got Adam Fox with an expiring contract. He'll be a restricted free agent. Same with Kaapo Kakko. Same with Vitali Kratsov. But that's also when Strome's contract comes off the books, and a lot of other stuff can happen between now and then. So I don't think it's an impossibility for the Rangers to fit Zibanejad and Eichel necessarily, but you have to make other sacrifices. And that anything with this deal, a deal of this magnitude, is going to require that. At the heart of this conversation is how much is Jeff Gorton willing to give up to make it happen. If the package is centered around Mika and Keandre Miller, or Miller, Hedo, plus a lot of other stuff, like I just mentioned, guys like Booch, that's a lot. That's a lot to give up. But in those scenarios, at least those two that I laid out, whether it's the Mika Miller package or the Hedo Booch Miller other stuff package, that would at least keep the Rangers from having to give up Lafreniere, Kakko, Fox, or Igor. So you kind of come out of that looking like a win. It stings to lose a guy like Mika for sure. It would sting to lose a guy like Hedo. It would definitely sting to lose a guy like Miller, given the hole that it would leave on the left side of your defense and given how enamored Rangers fans have been with him. And I don't really know what the right answer is. It all comes down to the particulars. It all comes down to whether Gorton feels there are solid alternatives out there. To me, I fully understand the fans who would sit there and say, well, these are our guys. Mika's our guy. Hedo's our guy. Miller's our guy. We don't want to have to give those guys up. We'd rather let them develop, maintain the depth that we have, and pursue other options. And I do think that there is a legitimate case to make to say, we don't want to have to give up the farm for Eichel. We would rather pursue another option. This is what we know. At some point soon, probably this offseason, the Rangers need to acquire a top six level center. And we know they have the assets to do it. We've talked about that at length. This has been their plan all along. They've accumulated all these assets. They're not all going to fit in the long-term plans for this franchise. So packaging them to get something that you need to bring in an impact player, it makes a lot of sense. And trust me, that is the plan. But it doesn't necessarily have to be Eichel or bust. There should be ways to get other quality centers, maybe not quite of that ilk, more of a second-line center type, whatever it may be. But in that scenario, you wouldn't have to surrender necessarily core players like Mika, Kakko, Miller. So I don't know what the right answer is, because, of course, there's a lot of appeal to going out and getting Eichel and having him with a Panarin and all this other talent in your lineup. That would be very enticing. But there could be an argument on the other hand to say, okay, let's get a high-quality center, but somebody that we don't have to give up our prime assets for necessarily, or at least not as many of our prime assets, and go to war with that. Let this core continue to grow while adding more of, I don't want to say secondary pieces, because you need a primary piece, but not like, you know, Eichel is like a top 10 player in the league. Maybe you're looking more like a top 40, top 50 player in the league where you don't have to give up quite as much to get him. The biggest hurdle, of course, if we're talking about Eichel, is whether Buffalo even reaches the point where they're willing to do it, or if Eichel reaches the point where he demands the trade. And as Bill just told us, he does not believe it has reached that point yet. So nothing is imminent here. That could change in the next few weeks if things spiral out of hand, of course. But right now, I think the logical timetable to have a serious conversation about this is the summer. I don't think it's right now. I could be wrong, but I think something happening at the trade deadline right now, I would put that at well less than 50%. And I think for the Rangers to kind of have the cap flexibility, and because right now, any trade, you're going to have the money close to equal to happen in season. That's another huge thing that we barely even touched on. But if you're going to make a trade with the Sabres right now, it has to match up cap-wise. Whereas in the offseason, you can make a trade where you take on more money and you have the freedom and the liberty and the time to sort of figure out the rest of the roster, right? And we know the Rangers have money coming off of the books with the buyout penalties and all that other stuff this summer. So I still think the summer is the time when you have a more serious conversation about this. And I do still think that it very much is an open-ended question of, is Eichel the guy that you do everything you can to get and give up a huge package to do it? Or are there other options? I don't know. It's an interesting conversation to have. I get why everybody's having it. And like I said, I'm going to try to lay out this stuff a little bit more detailed in a story coming this week. But for now, let's leave it at that. That was a lot of stuff to get to. And I hope you guys got a little clarity maybe from that conversation with Bill and, you know, really wrapped your minds around what it might take to even have this conversation and get something like that done. All right. Let's get to our next question. We're going to try to get through these last two in a little bit of a shorter time than that first one. Our next question comes from Chris Daly, who asks, what do you think the lines and lineup will look like when they have Kako and Panarin back? And he also mentions Kratsov. Let's start with Kako and Panarin, and then I'll touch quickly on Kratsov. I think your top nine with Kako and Panarin looks really solidified, right? There's kind of a spot for each of those guys right now where it makes sense. Now, there's kind of two options, too, as far as the construction of the lines. You could keep the top line they have right now, Lafreniere, Mika, and Buch, right? And in that case, you're almost certainly going to slot Panarin in with Strom, and then you could put Kako on the right wing of that line. Those three were actually playing pretty well together when they had the opportunity. That leaves for your third line, Kreider, Hedel, and Blackwell. Blackwell, you know, whether you guys want to admit it or not right now, he's locked into that top nine, at least until Kratsov gets here. So he's played well enough. He's earned it, no doubt about it. That third line could be kind of interesting, too, because Kreider and Hedel, I think, are the fastest two guys on the team. A lot of speed there. Blackwell works hard. I think there's a good argument to keep that top line as is, play Panarin with Strom and Kako, and then let that speed line as your third line kind of do its thing. The other option, though, is, and I've laid this out on the program in the past, if you want to play Panarin with Mika, which I also think makes a lot of sense, I really like the idea of letting Blackwell be the right winger on that line, do his hard work, do his grind you out, get to the net front, dig pucks out of corners, all the stuff that we've seen him do well, and be that sort of Jesper Foss presence on that line. And then in that case, I really like the idea of having Strom center a line with Lafreniere and Kako be a veteran presence in between the two young guys. And I really like the idea of reuniting that Kreider, Hedel, Buch line that we saw play really well together last season. That, I think, gives you three incredibly balanced lines. I don't even know if I would call one of those lines the third line. In that case, I think you spread the ice time pretty evenly and you kind of let them roll. So either of those two options are good. Listen, getting Kako and Panarin back in your lineup is going to make this team look a lot different. And those two options that I just laid out for line construction, I think either one of those Rangers fans would probably be pretty excited to see. When Kratsov comes over, you have to think that pushes Blackwell down to the fourth line if they're going to insert Kratsov right away. Kind of a tough sell given how well Blackwell's played, but I can't see anybody else on that top nine being the one that gets demoted. And then when Kratsov comes over, if you're going to put him in your top nine, you probably have to rethink things a little bit because you want to make sure that each of those lines has some defensive balance. And Kratsov is a guy who still needs to prove that he can do that at the NHL level. But of course, that will be a fascinating storyline to watch once the KHL playoffs are over. They began on Wednesday with Kratsov actually scoring the first goal of the game for Traktor. So they could be going for a little while. We'll see how that goes. His timetable for return still, you know, as Jeff Gorton told us back in December, will be whenever the playoffs are over, the Rangers plan on bringing him here. All right. Final question comes from Joey Jr., who asks, Vince, I've watched every Hartford game on my laptop. Not very impressive. Looks like maybe only Barron and Reuninen could make the jump. Your thoughts? Well, Joey, I probably would agree with you. I mean, if you look at that lineup right now, as far as guys that the Rangers would want to get a look at maybe this year and could visualize in their immediate future plans, yeah, Barron and Tarmo are obviously the guys. Barron is the top forward prospect for Hartford right now, and Tarmo is the top defenseman prospect right now. So those are the guys that I think, you know, and there's not even necessarily clear spots for those guys in the lineup, especially given some of the lineup combinations we just talked about. But I think those are kind of the next men up, if you will, as far as prospects who are playing in Hartford. I mean, there are other guys there that are interesting. Will Cooley, he's nowhere near being NHL ready. He just got drafted in the fall, but he was a second round pick. I think the Rangers down the line envision him as being an option for them, but certainly not right now. We've talked about guys like Justin Richards, who I think was signed primarily to be depth at center and play in Hartford and kind of see what comes of it. I certainly don't think there's any immediate plans to give him an NHL call-up, but I know the Rangers like him. I know they maybe down the line could see him as a fourth line grinding type of an option. And given the center stuff that we just talked about, I think having him compete with guys like Howden and Rooney for fourth line time in the next year or two, you know, is probably a good thing for the Rangers, but that's not a high, high level prospect, of course. The defenseman, really beyond Tarmo, there's not much there that you would expect to see at the NHL level. And then you've got a guy like Tyler Wahl playing goalie right now, who I don't think the Rangers view him as a starter necessarily in the long run. But if a trade happens, like the one we just talked about, where maybe a guy like Georgiev is included, then I think Tyler Wahl becomes a guy who's in the conversation as a backup for Igor Shesterkin. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the Hartford lineup right now, I don't think there's a guy there that you see as like a future top six forward or a future top four defenseman. That's not really the setup for Hartford right now, but there, you know, there are some guys to keep an eye on that could be depth players for sure. All right. With that, we are going to end this episode. It's been a jam-packed episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We got all of our Eichel conversation and talk out there. So we've had the conversation. Like I said, I'll probably do a story kind of breaking things down a little further sometime in the next few days, and we'll take it from there. But I'm not necessarily checking my phone constantly expecting a trade, you know, news or rumor to break it. Rumors are definitely breaking, but not news to break at any moment. I think this is going to be a little more of a patient thing, a process that we're going to see how it plays out heading into the offseason. With that, I will say goodbye. Thank you all for listening. I hope everybody has a great week, and I will talk to you guys next week.